Welcome to the podcast of WBFO's Weekly Press Pass. I'm Mark Scott. This week, Buffalo News suburban editor Bruce Andriach joins us. Lancaster Town Supervisor Dino Fidoli has proven to be quite a controversial figure since assuming office on January 1st. He's a proponent of limiting the financial incentives granted by the region's various industrial development agencies. Fidoli then targeted town employee unions for criticism by describing public employees as being the unproductive segment of the economy. Finally, he admitted late last month he has not paid property taxes on various properties he owns. Bruce, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
And is there any greater sin than a politician who fails to meet his or her tax obligations?
Well, I think Mr. Fidoli is finding that in many people's eyes, no, there is no greater sin, especially when you run for office and you make your name by saying things like the government is the enemy when you're in the government yourself. But, you know, when we wrote a story several weeks ago now about Mr. Fidoli and about his time in office and how he'd become a bit of a lightning rod, some of the people commenting on our website said, you know, be careful what you say, Dino, because this has a way of coming back to haunt you. And it did very quickly. And I think that the word is schadenfreude, that people are reveling in the fact that he's going through this right now.
Well, what impact do you think this tax delinquency will have on his political career?
Well, it's not going to help. I mean, let's face it. If you're running against him the next time for town supervisor, won't it be the first thing that you bring up? I mean, do we really want a man running our town who can't handle his own responsibilities? It's an easy call if you're a political opponent, and he also has a lot of political opponents both outside and within town government right now. So I think he's going to have to adjust the way that he's running the town if he wants to serve for another term, and I don't know that he does.
Do you know if it's a two-year or four-year term?
I think the town supervisor is a four-year term.
So it's an election 3 years from now, people tend to forget.
Yeah, but as when Mr. Fidoli ran for office last time, people probably remember that his past drug use brought up, and that was in his long ago past. So These things have a way of sticking to politicians, especially people who direct the spotlight at themselves, as Mr. Fidoli did. So I would be concerned if I were him.
As we celebrate Labor Day, I don't imagine we'll see Mr. Fidoli marching in the annual parade in South Buffalo.
Probably not.
Yeah. Well, does criticizing public employees play well with the overall public, or are there enough union members locally yet who will hold this against him?
Yeah, I think in Western New York, there certainly is still, it's not like it once was. It's diminished quite a bit, but a lot of people in this community work for unions. And I've always said that it's fine to be critical of specific contracts. I'm in a union, and I know a lot of people who are in unions, and I can understand why people look at labor contracts and think, well, this is the problem. If only these people could take fewer benefits or less money. But the reality is unions do protect people, and the unions very often represent the little guys. So I think as a politician to go out and attack the unions, especially when you've got skeletons in your closet, as Mr. Fidoli had, you're playing a tricky game.
Still, do you give Fidoli any credit for hitting this issue head on? He didn't back away or try to spin it like some politicians do.
Well, it would have been very difficult for him to do anything except admit that it was true. He did say that, you know, he had not paid taxes on this in the hope that he'd be able to sell the properties and then pay the taxes from the proceeds of the sale, which is a plausible explanation. And if you and I were in that situation, you know, we might do something similar. But the reality is he is an elected official. He's held to a higher standard. Good for him that he came out and admitted that it happened, but bad for him that he allowed it to happen.
Let's move on to Williamsville, where Williamsville South High School's legendary basketball coach Al Monaco was dismissed by Superintendent Scott Martzloff. We don't really know a lot of what's happening here.
It's been very frustrating for me. One of my colleagues, Sandra Tan, along with Keith McShay, have been writing this story for the past several days. And initially, what we knew is that Mr. Monaco was being relieved of his coaching duties, and we were given these kind of boilerplate school district type statements about it being a personnel matter and having not more information released. The problem with that, as we've since learned, is Mr. Monaco is a certifiable legend in coaching circles in Western New York, and has not only supporters among other coaches, but his former players are coming out of the woodwork to talk about what a great coach and a great man he is. the consequence of that has been the superintendent has kind of let a little information out in dribs and drabs, and we found out that a police investigation was conducted that did not come up with enough information to charge him with anything. And there are references to what it is not. It's not a matter of a sexual or racial nature, but we still don't know what it is. And, you know, there are reasons why government organizations are entitled to keep certain things secret. But in this case, I think the ability to do that is actually harming the Williamsville School District more than helping. And it's certainly not doing I think it's actually harming Williamsville more than it is Mr. Monaco. He's coming out looking like the good guy in this. The reality is we don't really know what happened. We still don't know. And until we can find out, it's tough for the public to judge.
Indeed, as a journalist, you always don't want to hear, well, it's a personnel issue because it seems like a crutch.
Right.
And yet, on the other hand, I can understand why it is used. You don't want to harm someone's reputation. But so there seems to be a fine line here.
Very much so. And I mean, the truth is that Mr. Monaco's reputation has been harmed. And it's been harmed because that the reason that they're trying not to harm it, because they won't say what he's accused of doing. And believe me, that's something that we would like to find out, and I think that a lot of people in Williamsville would as well.
Let's move on to politics. The Hochul Collins race, you did a poll along with WGRZ, done by Siena Research Institute, and it found the race a virtual dead heat.
Yeah,
do you expect that to continue through the fall campaign?
It looks that way. I mean, the numbers seem to suggest that that it's going to be very close. I don't think anybody's calling the race right now. I think that the advertising dollars are going to start really being spent as Representative Hochul and Mr. Collins try to portray themselves and each other in the way they'd like voters to remember. What's interesting is this will, I think everyone agrees, is going to come down to a question of Medicare. As soon as Mr. Ryan was named the vice president candidate for the Republican Party, that was the story, that it's going to be impossible to not discuss this. And of course, in Western New York, which has an older population, this is going to be the key issue. And I think that from Mr. Collins' standpoint, he is trying to portray himself as somebody who does not want to end Medicare, as we know it. Ms. Hochul will certainly try to portray him as the opposite.
And interestingly, neither of these candidates chose to attend their respective party conventions. Mr. Collins did not go to the Republican convention last week, and this week Congresswoman Hochul is staying home as well.
If you can look at that two ways, I think that they realize they really need to be home to campaign. This is where all their voters are. Increasing their national profile over these next 2 months is not really going to help them as much as being able to go to senior centers and knock on doors and be here showing people that they're going to actually represent the community. And the other thing is they want to be here just because they want to be able to answer what their opponent is saying as well as quickly as possible.
This race is so fascinating because on paper, there's no way Hochul should be reelected because of the overwhelming Republican majority in this district. Yet it is so close. And as you said, nobody is picking a winner yet.
Yeah. When Mr. Collins got into this race, I'm sure that's one of the main things that if you're a politician, you look at, you have the enrollment advantage. And Ms. Hochul doesn't have enough of a legacy as a congresswoman to kind of enjoy the benefits of that incumbency. But, you know, Western New York is a different animal sometimes. We don't always just automatically vote for the Democrat or vote for the Republican. It happened before, I think it was in the early 90s with Jack Quinn, that it didn't look in the numbers. It seemed like Dennis Gorski should have been able to win that election, but it didn't work out that way. And sometimes it has more to do with other factors. The last time I think it was more about the choice between the two candidates and their styles and where they stood on issues important to seniors. This time that might be the issue again as well.
Finally, on this Labor Day, we do know you work very hard at your job at the Buffalo News. But
thank you for saying that.
You did have some fun at a recent assignment, a trip to Fantasy Island.
Yeah, an assignment of my own doing. I've been for this past year doing one column per month on things that we're calling timeless treasures, places that have been around here forever and are still going strong. So we went up to Fantasy Island, where I hadn't gone in a while. It's not really in my age category anymore, and found that Marty DiPietro, who took it over in 1994 when it was really struggling, has done a nice job. I made the point in the column that it's always been the other amusement park for Western New Yorkers. We were a Crystal Beach community, and then we were a Darien Lake town. But for people with young kids, it's really a great place to go, while still being a place where teenagers and people who like a thrill once in a while enjoy themselves as well.
Less expensive, no parking charges.
That's the most amazing thing. I went up there last week to interview their public relations person, and I was getting my wallet out looking for the guy taking money, and Ray Weigel said, no, that's one of the ways that Marty DiPietro wants to set himself apart. You will never pay for parking at Fantasy Island, which must leave an awful lot of money on the table for him. But I think it also, in our community and our economy, I think people appreciate that.
Now, did I see on your Facebook page or somewhere that you were forced to go on some of the rides so your videographer could catch that? Some of these rides are terrifying. I don't do rides anymore.
Mark, I'm not sure what you're referring to. Okay. I know that I would never put myself in a position of embarrassing myself, but yeah, our videographer's name is Joe Popielkowski, whose name I'd like to get out there, said, yeah, go on the Ferris wheel, go on the roller coaster, and then he made me look foolish, and so, but that was fun too.
Speaking of the Fantasy Island Ferris wheel, I remember the last time I was there, and again, it's because my son was young at the time, and we went on the Ferris wheel on a Saturday night. We were one of the last to go on it because the rains came shortly after that, and they shut the ride down. Then the next day, there was tragedy. A young boy fell out of one of the gondolas on the ride.
Right.
I heard about it Monday morning while listening to the news, while going for my morning run, and it just sort of spooked me out because we had to be, you know, one or two rides removed from what happened there. But under the new ownership, it seems to be thriving.
Right.
When back in 1990, I think it was really in tough shape.
Yeah, it did go through a really rough period. And it's interesting that you look at it, and I'm old enough that I remember going there as a very young kid. One of the things we highlighted in the piece was that the Wild West Shootout is still done there. And I said, boy, you know, your memory plays tricks on you as you get older. But I remembered that the big moment was the bad guy would get shot on the roof, and he would roll onto the ground. There was nothing there to protect him. And Ray Weigel said, no, that's not your memory. That was true. The kind of workplace rules and the things that regulate amusement parks have changed quite a bit in the time since Fantasy Island has been open. And I think that it's overcome a lot of those issues and a lot of the problems that it had in the past.
Bruce Andreatch is suburban editor of the Buffalo News. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Mark.
Mark Scott, WBFO and AM 970 News.